Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. We're grateful and excited to be here with you. My name is Heather Choate. I am founder and owner of High Thrive Coaching with Mark Johnston, who is here as well. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Heather?
Doing all right. Came down with a little bit of cold last night, so fingers crossed we get over that quickly. But we want to thank you guys for coming back here to the Thriving Marriage and supporting our mission here to help millions of marriages thrive no matter what circumstances they're facing. And today we're going to be talking about when to tell if your marriage is over or not, part two. So if you missed part one that we did last week, really encourage you to go through that. There's some awesome stuff. We realized that this topic warranted two sessions, two episodes here. And so we're going to dive into that today. Before we get to that though, I'm going to share a client win. This is a past client win. And I believe this is a female. I want to make sure I get it right. She says, taking my kids to school today, I checked my messenger and a message from Heather popped up about fear versus love. I started listening in and wow. So I decided to ask my hubby, but instead of face-to-face, I texted him. She says it's in Spanish, but this is what I texted him. I like being with you. I like spending time with you. I like flirting with you and sending you messages and memes of what I feel for you. He replied with emojis. So I asked him, what do you mean with those emojis? I want to understand you better. Hubby replies, it's okay with me, and a kissy face. So her win here is that she says, I overcame my fear of asking the question because I was assuming it bothered him and made me be inconsistent because he would sometimes not reply back. And another win that she says, I can openly express what I feel for my hubby to him, but I will not overdo it either. And so I like that instead of just assuming what her husband meant by emojis, right? Sometimes we get text message replies from our spouse or even in-person replies, and we just assume why they're saying what they're saying or what they're doing. So instead of assuming that, she asked him straight out and understood where he was really coming from, his perspective there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times we will share these big wins with like these big accomplishments, like, hey, my husband came back, or hey, my wife wants to work things out. And sometimes like these little things, just getting some better understanding, getting to the point where you can communicate a little bit better, that you're on the same page, that you can actually say nice things to each other, is still like a good win in a lot of cases. I mean, this is actually what I think what makes the marriage feel good in many cases is this ability to have this clarity and communication, some ability to like go back and forth and say, hey, look, I like you. And I like that part of at least my marriage.
Yep. Agreed. And it is those little things that do add up, and it's a shift right there, pattern interrupt, where maybe she was assuming before what her husband meant, which then would put her into more fear and maybe make her inconsistent in her behaviors. So instead of just going down that same route that she would normally go down, she chose to do something different and ask him an open-ended question and try to understand where he's coming from. I love that it was not a lot of pressure, right? In her question, she asked, what do you mean with those emojis? I want to understand you better, right? And so it's just a really non-pressure, hey, I'm just trying to understand you. Not, hey, are you coming back to me? Or, hey, will you commit to me forever? Or, hey, why aren't you in love with me anymore? Right? It's just like, I want to understand you better. And so it's a very low pressure kind of question with a desire to understand. And so she pattern interrupted that. And that is, it's those little things that puts us on a completely different trajectory. When you make a 1% degree change, now you're suddenly on a totally different path and you're going to get to a totally different destination. And so like Mark said, sometimes we look at the huge accomplishment, like the peak of the mountaintop, you know, your triumphant moment, renewing wedding vows, putting wedding rings back on, all those things. But it really is these little things that add up over time that really lead to those bigger outcomes that we all like to see. So we asked you guys a question, and I'd like to ask you now, as you're watching or listening, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, how hopeful are you in saving your marriage? So leave a comment, let us know, what is your level of hope here that this situation is going to be a good one, that you're going to have the kind of marriage that you want to have? We asked our Thriving Marriage Facebook group members, and we had like almost 100 comments here in a very short amount of time. And of course, they were all across the spectrum. But I would say from what I saw probably like 20, 25% zeros. And then, you know, some threes, some fours, and then a lot more of like the higher numbers. So not a whole lot of like this middle ground that I saw as I was looking through your answers. And I was responding to a lot of you and talking to you guys a lot over there. The zeros, though, were really surprising to me, because here we have a group about saving marriage, helping your marriage. And so to see that so many people saw, had absolutely no hope, made me kind of wonder, like, well, why are you here? And so I think that there is more hope than you're maybe recognizing. Otherwise, you wouldn't even be in the group. Like, you wouldn't even be listening to us right now. So there has to be a little bit more hope. So I'm going to push you guys a little bit on that. Because if you absolutely had no hope, if you thought it was completely done, then you wouldn't even be like spending any more time on this, usually, right? So our intention here is to help you know when a marriage is really over, when it is time to move on, and when there's actually some opportunity for things to turn around. And like I said, Mark and I, we did a podcast about this last week. So we're going to go a little bit deeper into the next points that we wanted to share to help you assess whether marriage is over or not. And make sure you watch to the end, because we're going to have some questions for you to ask yourself to kind of do a bit of a marriage analysis, or some of the diagnostic questions that we go through with our clients to determine if there's opportunity for things to turn around or not. So make sure you stay to the end, because those questions are going to be very valuable.
One thing I wanted to point out with the questionnaire, the, you know, on the scale of 1 to 10, I did notice a whole bunch of people, there's several answers like this that said, okay, it was a 0 or it was a -5 X amount of months ago, however many months ago. And a lot of them were saying, okay, now that I've stuck it out and I've been working on this, they're reporting much higher numbers, like -5 to a +5, or even some saying like 6, 7, some saying 10 even, you know. And I find that interesting, because there are, like you said, Heather, there's a lot of this polarization. There's a lot on the lower end and a lot on the higher end. There's a few in the middle, yeah. But I just found that interesting that all these stories of lower ends and sticking it out and it shifting over time when they thought it was hopeless previously.
Yeah. Thank you so much for pointing that out. I saw that too. So thank you for sharing that with everyone. Like I'm going to leave the name anonymous here, but she says a 10, I couldn't say that not that long ago. And then a bunch of people are asking like, what worked for you? How did you get there? Mm-hmm. And so it seems like it goes from, I think this has a lot to do with the fight, flight, or freeze mode of when you go through trauma, then things look really, really bleak and they look really, really hopeless. And that's why it's so important that you don't just rely on your own instincts in those moments, because if you just react from that kind of a place, the effect has longer lasting implications, right? And that's why it's really important to get outside perspective on what's going on in your marriage to see, is this a situation that can really be salvaged or not? Because we can't rely on our own feelings of hope to know if it's actually accurate. So as we go into that, keep that in mind. We, as the marriage experts here, want to help you see logically and even analytically what hope there may be. And so don't just rely on your own emotional state of hope, because that's actually not an accurate measurement of if a relationship can be turned around or not. Would you agree, Mark?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So let's do a brief recap of what we discussed last time. Just go a high level overview of some of the points that we talked about, and then we'll go into where we're at this week.
Yeah. So of course, like Heather, you gave the introduction. We're talking about, okay, well, how do we tell if your marriage is over or not? We did discuss some really important pieces for what's needed in a happy or healthy relationship. And those were like fulfillment. Like, does your relationship support your needs? Does it like add to your needs? Is there good feedback? Is there intimacy or closeness, not just physical, but emotional and all sorts of intimacy? Is there positive regard? And, you know, is there commitment in the relationship? We said, okay, like a lot of these situations that tend to end a marriage, whether this is like affairs and infidelity, or this shutdown of communication through defensiveness and stonewalling, whether it's drifting apart, it's usually really hurting one of these pillars. And so we started kind of going through like actual big issues that are likely to lead to divorce, because we're saying, okay, we see things like affairs or apathy or defensiveness or like a lack of sex drive or sexual compatibility. And we're saying, well, you know, that's not really the root of what is actually driving people apart. And but there are some bigger things to look at. We talked very briefly about some unwillingness to change as like one of these things, this holding on to a negative regard. And we kind of left off at that. We're going to go over a few more of these bigger issues. And like Heather mentioned, some questions to consider.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was the recap.
So let's dive into it. So let's talk about the next one there, Mark, which is a loss of connection or feelings. Mm-hmm. And we often hear this when, you know, the marriage is unfulfilling, or maybe intimacy is completely lacking, or maybe even destroyed. Sometimes we'll hear, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I don't feel very connected here. I don't feel like we have the spark. We lost the spark, right? So Mark, what really happens that leads to a loss of connection?
So in terms of like a loss of connection, we can look at this from a lot of different angles. I actually wanted to bring up something that I feel is really relevant here. It's, you know, Heather and I have notes. It's actually not in the notes here, what I wanted to discuss. I think a big area where you do lose connection can be explained by what's called KNAPP's relationship model, K-N-A-P-P. Actually, I'm going to pull it up on the screen just to illustrate this just for a moment. 1 second. All right. As you can see, I'm going all professional here, and I put it into the search engine to find the image. And I'm going to admit, I thought of this last moment. I'm like, okay, this is really applicable. But basically why I wanted to share this, why I'm bringing up this specific image, and you can see there's a whole bunch of like different versions of the same thing, but this kind of describes how people come together and how the relationship comes apart. And generally it's agreed on that sitting here at the top level is fairly healthy if you can navigate these things well. Meaning like, can you actually formally create a relationship? Now, but the other piece here is, and where I think a lot of connection gets lost is at some point, the two of you are going to have some different ideas, different beliefs, different preferences. And can you navigate a difference in beliefs or a preference for activities without it causing some problems? And what tends to happen here is if that's not done well, if you go to your partner and say, hey, look, I want to get involved with fixing up my motorcycle or gardening, or I want to start a new business, or I want to be more social in my life, or whatever it happens to be, and that's not done well, or it's not received well, well, what tends to happen is you kind of move down this ladder and you start creating some more distance. You start sharing less information about these things that are interesting you, and you start avoiding those topics, and it keeps going further and further down. So if that's not handled well, if like things get further, it goes to stagnation and then avoidance and then terminating the relationship. But that's one way connection can be lost. I also think that and this is somewhat related, if we're applying this back to those pillars that we were just discussing, I do think that connection can really be lost as the marriage stops supporting needs of one partner or both. So if you're really needing some more connection, if you prefer to have a lot more variety in your marriage, or if you need to feel a bit more significant, if you need to feel supported in that, and it's not, well, it means that you stop really going to each other for your needs, and all these bids for attention go unmet. It's a similar sort of process. You're saying, okay, hey, look, I know you like time for yourself, hypothetical wife, but I really need some more time to connect with you. Those bids go unmet or are even met with anger, and you start going down that ladder, those stairs that I was just talking about with Knapp's relationship model. But this is how I see it. Heather, I know you and I, we've talked about sometimes this in terms of like the intimacy cycle, or, you know, what happens when intimacy is rejected or it becomes unacceptable or something, and people drift apart. But like basically what we're saying is there's lots of different theories that we can look at that kind of describe the same thing. It's these bids for attention, these bids for needs, these bids for something to happen, something to be different. And then that's not handled well within the relationship, and it causes this drift.
Right. It does, because it becomes unmotivating to engage in the relationship when you've made a bid for connection or intimacy or closeness or a need to be met and you feel rejected. Then the more you're rejected, the less motivating it is to want to meet your partner's needs, and then they feel rejected. And then the cycle just continues like that, right? So like an example here, maybe the wife is really, you know, exhausted, maybe has a new baby, I don't know, like a lot going on. And the husband's like cuddling up to her, wants to be intimate, sexually intimate. And she's like, I'm exhausted. So she rejects him. And then, so he's feeling rejected. And then the next time she wants to kind of talk and unload and emotionally connect with him, he's feeling rejected. So then he doesn't really engage in that. So now she's feeling rejected. She's feeling like, ah, you're not really emotionally there for me. You're not really supporting me. You're not really helping me out or listening to me. And I don't feel like we have a connection here. So then the next time he wants a need met or like asking a bid for some kind of connection, then she rejects him. And then that just deteriorates and deteriorates and deteriorates from there. It becomes a really self-perpetuating cycle. But the good news is that it's solvable, because the opposite is also true. When your partner makes a bid for closeness or connection or understanding or for a need to be met and you meet it, then they will more likely want to meet your need the next time that you ask or put it out there. And so this is how we get things going in the connective side. It requires some vulnerability, because there's no intimacy without vulnerability. Otherwise, it's not really meaningful if it's not a little bit scary and vulnerable to put ourselves out there. And it usually requires, you know, being proactive to build up your partner's needs first, rather than waiting for them to make requests. And usually, for most of our audience here, your spouse is not really willing to consider your needs or willing to work on things with you. And so that's why we say it requires you going first. Mm-hmm. So you have to be the one to kind of put aside some of the fear, swallow some of the pride if you're wanting to save the relationship, and be willing to go first here. Mark, what is your insight on this?
Well, I'm thinking about like even some of my own experiences in terms of loss of connection. Because I don't know about you, Heather. I mean, your marriage, but I think most marriages have some amount of ebb and flow. As in, you know, points where things are feeling much more connecting and, say, less connecting. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, well, my marriage with my wife, Jen, feels very solid. And it feels as though we do connect well, in the long run. I would say, like, right now, I would describe my marriage as very connected. And I'm thinking about, like, how... the reason why I'm going down this path is you're saying, Heather, this is a solvable problem. So I'm thinking, like, how is this solved within my own marriage? We could look at this from a lot of different angles. We could talk about, you know, what you and I teach in terms of home messages or making the relationship a priority or being supportive for what's needed. But, you know, I think a big factor here is that when the marriage starts to dip a little bit, when it starts to feel a little bit less connected, I do feel like my wife and I make it a point to resolve those concerns rather than just let it sit. And I think that's a big factor here in not allowing the marriage to drift apart too much before we address it. But I wanted to know your experience with this as well, Heather. Like, what do you feel like is the factor that lets you and Ben navigate this sort of issue?
I think it's very similar to what you shared. It's that we both want to, and that we recognize when it's gotten a little off and address it sooner rather than later. In the past, we would wait a long time or we wouldn't know how to address it healthfully. And so that would create a bigger issue. I've shared before that my husband tends to be the one that kind of closes up and doesn't want to address something that's uncomfortable. And I tend to push things, which then makes him close up more. And so, I'll just give an example of even this last week. I was going past through my pictures of the past 7 years, and I wanted to put together an image for Instagram. Okay, this is kind of silly, but I wanted to show me going bald from when I had cancer to all of the stages of like my hair growth. Okay, I know it just might seem silly, but I wanted to put it together even just more for my own sake, just to see the whole process of the past 7 years. It was like taking a snapshot of the journey along the way. And yeah, I know hair is kind of a frivolous thing, but I just wanted to do it. So I spent several, you know, like at least a half an hour or something pouring through all the pictures and putting them all together. And then I showed them with Ben. And for me, this was like a very emotional thing, like to show the journey of where we were to where we are and just looking at like the physical changes in my hair over the past 7 years. And as I shared that with him, I asked him which one was his favorite, and he immediately closed up. Like, I am not answering that question. And I was wanting this to be like a connecting, like, wow, look how far we've come, you know? So I felt dismissed. And I felt like, why are you not willing to even answer like that question? And so instead of just letting that develop into a story, a negative narrative about this experience, I felt like I put a bid out there for this intimate connecting, oh, look how far we've come kind of moment, to Ben is like dismissive. I could have created a very, you know, strong narrative about, well, Ben doesn't care. Ben doesn't want to talk to me about it, you know, anything like that. Instead, I came back to the home message that we do want to be close. We do have a good connection. And what matters to me matters to him. And what matters to him matters to me. And so I just shared it kind of openly, like, hey, I felt a little dismissed. What was going on for you? You know, and he's like, I've just been out a lot on my mind right now. I'm trying to do the house and the new job and, you know, all these things. And so we just clear it up really quickly now. So instead of letting kind of like the win that was shared earlier, instead of letting it turn into this assumption of something, we clear it up and then find out where we're both coming from. And when we find out where we're both coming from, we reiterate that home message that we are there for each other, that we do want a good connection, that we do make this relationship a priority. And then as we both understand where we're coming from, that intimacy of here's where I was coming from, here's where you're coming from. And that understanding helps to build that bridge again, where we do feel closer and connected. Now, that's a really small example, but what I'm trying to illustrate, and I hope it's coming across, is that these small things can snowball over time and create really big lacks of connection and intimacy. So, Mark, I would love to address, for someone that feels like the snowball is now probably the size of Mount Everest between them and their spouse, we do this all the time with our clients, where they're probably feeling like a zero on the hope scale, right? Like, there's nothing I can do to turn this around. We couldn't be further apart. And then after they've been doing this with us for a while, then their hope score goes up to like a 5 or a 10. How do we first help people get there when they feel like, okay, I can't just talk about pictures about my hair on Instagram? I mean, the issues between us are a lot more serious right now. They feel like they've become so disconnected. How do we help them to start to rebuild some of that intimacy and connection?
Well, we certainly have our own like step-by-step sort of process, but I'm gonna go actually. I've been liking this NAPS relationship model recently. And I was, without really like following it terribly close in our teachings, I kind of realized, oh, this is kind of what we teach anyway. Hmm. If we look at this, it says, okay, well, like you start initiating, experimenting, intensifying. So reducing uncertainty and promote positive outcomes by exchanging public in, like what this is saying, we talk about creating some common ground, engaging in small talk, sharing personal sort of information, establishing mutual awareness of the relationship, begin to lay out ground rules. Don't we talk about making clear requests,
right,
and whatnot? You know, it, going up a little bit further is a little bit more commitment, but there's a lot of, you know, when we're talking about building up connection again, it is a lot about these initial stages again. And it might feel a little bit odd since you're like, well, no, I've been with my husband or wife for 20 years, 15 years, however long. But the point here is you've gone down these steps, and it's not a, the reason why it's come apart is it's become unsafe or unrewarding to be a little bit more open. And so you do need to kind of go into these earlier stages, creating those common goals, taking a step back from like the intense relationship and kind of focusing more on connecting sort of conversations. And I know that's very broad what I'm saying. It's just, we always kind of have this kind of, this comment at some point in our podcast, we could probably talk for hours just on this one topic of how do we create more connection. But yeah, suffice it to say, you kind of have to start small.
Right, which is where a lot of people really get it wrong, because they make huge bids for connection,
yes,
huge bids for commitments. You feel like you're justified, like you said, like, because we've been together so long and we're married, shouldn't I be able to do that? But usually you're doing it out of fear to try to get them back anyway. Usually the underlying motive is like a lot of fear-based and desperation. And so it absolutely backfires. And what we do is really different. It's like go slow to go fast. And that feels unnatural at first, but we've proven that it works. And it is actually the faster route, is to take the pressure off and do smaller bids for connection, smaller bids for closeness, smaller bids for affection. And that then that starts to get the snowball going in the right direction. All right, let's talk about the next one here, which maybe your spouse is finding better options elsewhere. And so to tell if a marriage is over or not, we need to examine what's going on with affairs, with freedom, and issues like that. So Mark, this one's especially challenging, right?
Yes.
It's usually combined with some other issues in the marriage. It's usually the symptom, and there are other root causes showing this to come up, right?
Mm-hmm. If we're talking about this in terms of like the pillars, once again, it's a combination sort of issue. It's almost always there's problems with feedback, as in problems weren't addressed ahead of time. Someone was wanting something more from the relationship, or something was missing and they weren't able to talk about it. And so we can also talk about it in terms of that other pillar, that need for fulfillment, or that pillar of having some better intimacy. Like this could be any number of these combined. Maybe the person having the affair has lost any amount of positive regard for their spouse, and so they're going elsewhere. But the bigger issue here is we have this problem, this deficit, and that deficit's being filled somewhere else. And so it becomes very difficult to say, well, no, why don't you come back? We'll work on the problems. Essentially, you're proposing a lot of effort and a lot of emotional investment when here's this easy path over here. And that's why the situation becomes sometimes very difficult to handle and fix. But Heather, I mean, does this actually, I'm saying how difficult this is, but does that mean that you should give up on this situation if this is happening?
Well, that is always a personal choice.
Of course, yes.
But we know from working with so many tens of thousands of couples now that an affair or getting needs met outside the relationship, whether it be emotional, spiritual, physical, sexual, any of the above, does not necessarily mean the end of the marriage. More often than not, it means that there are things that are going on inside the relationship that have not been addressed healthfully. And until you learn what your part of the contribution to that situation was, the pattern tends to repeat itself. Sometimes you think, oh, I just got to get that dirtbag out of my life. I'm going to get a man that respects me. And then you go into the next relationship only to have the same thing happen again. And that's just the reality, is that yes, cheaters tend to cheat again, but those that have been cheated on tend to be cheated on as well. So rather than saying, hey, let's just throw away this relationship, it's more like, hey, let's look at how to solve what created this situation. And we've had numerous clients be able to heal from an affair and say it was actually one of the best things that happened, which is an odd thing to say, but they do say it, because it helped them to uncover what was dysfunctional before, what led to the affair happening in the first place, and heal those things so it becomes a strength, right? So what's important to know here is that your spouse, like just as human beings, we tend to go towards the outcome that's going to give us the least amount of resistance. We just do. And if we're feeling like needs aren't being met, then sometimes we scramble to get them met and we make low value choices in a desperate attempt to try to get those needs met, right? So if great things are being offered outside the marriage and the marriage itself maybe has become stagnant for many years, then you do get very high chances that someone will start looking for other solutions. But the bottom line is, Mark, you asked, like, this is solvable.
Yes.
It is solvable when we choose to not just look at the painful thing that's happening, the painful choice that our spouse is making, or the painful choice that maybe we made ourselves. It's looking at those underlying things that caused it to happen in the first place, so that that wound doesn't just resurface or reappear maybe a few months from now, maybe a few years from now, or even a few decades from now, but that you've really created the healing inside yourself and inside this relationship. So Mark, what does it really take? I know we've done an entire podcast just on this issue, yes. But what is a high level overview of what it takes to move towards that healing?
Well, I want to bring up an example from a recent conversation I had with a client to kind of illustrate this. So I'm thinking of a client I have been speaking with recently who she says her husband's having this midlife crisis. Where he's become very interested in this other woman who's married. There's all this kind of secrecy around it. He's spending lots of money in the situation and getting into all these unhealthy sort of activities. And I had to speak to this client because she was saying, I want to go tell him what's going on, and I know, and he can't do this to me. And I was like, okay, that's certainly an option. And we had to talk about the kind of effect that this approach would have. And I'm not saying, hey, you can't go confront partners about an affair. That's not what I'm saying. We talked about a different path with in terms of confronting this situation. We talked about discussing why engaging with this other woman was so compelling. And to be clear, this wasn't a physical affair. Wasn't that. It was just kind of like a really like a fascination with this other woman. But like we had to talk about what was needed from this situation and what the boundaries were and ways that we could build up some of what was needed within the marriage itself. It was an approach that was like less angry and you've done something wrong to me to something's going on here that you're unhappy enough. You're unhappy enough that you've taken this 30-year marriage and you're like bringing it to this point where it could collapse and come apart and you could lose everything. Something must be happening. Once again, like, and I had to talk with her also about, you know, one, not like just pushing down her own feelings for the sake of the marriage and feeling healthy about sharing her own, but like it was this big balancing act. It was very, very much about this balancing act of like building up positive regard, having clear communication, having some very clear and consistent boundaries. And it meant a lot about demonstrating how the relationship could be this situation where you didn't have to struggle to meet your needs or to have your needs supported. It meant the marriage couldn't simply be a situation where you allowed your partner to do what they want, or for the marriage to be a situation where there's an absence of problems. And that's where I see these longer term relationships coming apart, is that's what the marriage has become. You can be your own person. You can differentiate, but you're not really supported in that differentiation. If we're going back, I'm going to tie back to that NAPSA relationship model.
Yeah.
That's what I see, you know, is the high level overview of what is needed in these situations when a better, I'm going to put in quotes, better option is found elsewhere outside of the marriage.
Awesome. And that is a process, but it is possible. When do we know, Mark, if it's too far gone? Because that's the question I think that everyone wants to know. If it's too far gone with an affair, with their desire for freedom, that there's maybe better options elsewhere, when do we know it's absolutely to the point of no return?
I think this would be a good moment to discuss some of these questions that you mentioned earlier. We have several in here that, hold on, I'm just making a note in these questions. Okay. Like I said, here are these questions. I think these are excellent. It's a good place to start. I'm not going to pretend that this is an exhaustive list and that these are the only questions that you need to ask yourself, but I do think it's a great place to start here. And I think first and foremost, in determining like whether this is done or not, whether you should keep going or not, is your partner willing to work with you on changes? Now, I'm putting that first because I kind of wanted to discuss it just for a moment. I mean, you and I, we talk all the time about fixing things on your own.
Right.
And here I am saying, okay, ask yourself, is your partner willing to work with you on changes? I'm just saying this is something to consider. And a lot of these questions are something to consider. And if we have like a lot of poor answers to many of these questions, then I would say, hey, that this is a consideration of what you need to like really think about how much you want to invest in fixing this going forward, or how much you want to work towards staying in the marriage. So I think this is probably one of the bigger considerations, even though Heather and I have a lot of solutions to get around this particular problem if your partner is not willing to work with you on changes right now.
Right. We have estimated about 85%, 90% of our clients start working on this alone. Definitely. And so most of you are probably saying, yeah, no, my spouse is not willing to work on it with me. They're not willing to make changes. And oftentimes we're looking at our spouse to be the one that makes the changes to fix everything for us. Yes. And we need to flip that around on its head and say, actually, that's not how it's going to work at all. If you're wanting your spouse to change, if you're expecting them to be the one that changes, then you are setting yourself up for something that you cannot control. And we cannot promise that they will do that, because as we all know, no one can control another human being. Sometimes we have people that come onto masterclasses or in our Facebook group, and they're just saying they need to change. They need to end the affair. They need to do this. They need to blah, 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 blah. And they're not willing to do it. Then that leaves you with no hope. And that might be a reason, my friends, why a lot of you are putting zero, is because you're putting all of the responsibility or future action for the situation on your spouse. And you don't realize that you actually have a huge influence in what happens in the relationship. You are 50% of the system. And oftentimes it feels like they're holding all the cards and they're calling all the shots, and that you might feel helpless here. And that's actually not true. So what we teach you guys how to do, like we said, 85, 90% of our clients start there, is, you know, how to empower yourself about what changes you can make that will influence the situation and get it going in the right direction. And when you realize that you have more control than you maybe thought, or maybe are thinking right now, that does give you a a lot more hope and a lot more sense of peace and security situation. So that's something that we want to look at for sure. The next set of questions have to do with that intimacy that we talked about, that cycle. One of the things that we look at as we're assessing a marriage is how often are you currently communicating? I do this in my masterclasses. So if you guys have ever been to my masterclass, I usually do an assessment with you guys on how often are you currently communicating? And I'll ask you, you know, have you talked within the past year? You know, have you not even seen each other for several months? Do you only talk over lawyers and maybe text message? Are you able to talk to each other 1 to 2 times per month face-to-face? Do you talk 1 to 2 times per week face-to-face? And we look at some of these markers because what we've proven is that if you have the opportunity to talk even 1 or 2 times per month, then there is a great hope for your marriage to turn around. Now, sometimes we do have people with restraining orders or court orders, and you can only talk through lawyers. And we just want to be really realistic with you because it's to your benefit and ours to make sure that this is something that's actually going to be viable. And sometimes I have people that come on the masterclass and they're like, I haven't talked to my husband for 18 months at all. I'm like, no text, like no phone. Yeah. And he lives on the other side of the world because he's deployed. And I have to just be really honest and say, this is not a viable situation. Is there any opportunity for you to talk in the future? No. Then that is going to be a situation we're going to look like and say, you know, there's not a lot of hope here. I cannot give you false hope. I cannot paint a fairy tale for you. If you're not communicating, at least in some amount, even if it's surface level or just about the kids, then there's not a lot of opportunity for you to turn this around. So that's one of the things that we do in our marriage assessment. If you guys want to do a complete marriage assessment with us, where we guide you through this and help you uncover what's really going on, then leave a comment saying me, and we will give you the link where you can book that free marriage assessment. Another question to consider with intimacy is, can you freely display or share emotions? Do you have that ability to be vulnerable, to share how you're feeling, to display emotions? And what level is that at currently? How open can you be with physical affection? Sometimes we have clients that they're able to, you know, have sex and be close and cuddle, but they cannot share feelings. And sometimes the opposite is true. You can share feelings, but there is no touching, no hugs, no kisses, nothing. So we look at all of these different markers to determine how viable a relationship is or not. And then another quick question here, how are you able to discuss sexual needs? You know, how much are you able to do that? How open are they to that? How open are you to that? So these are all questions about intimacy. Mark, what have we seen as far as viability in these different areas?
So I do feel like in terms of viability, it's much more important to consider communication and emotional intimacy if you're trying to put things back together. I'm looking at like pathways to a better marriage, to reconciliation. And while it probably sucks, usually when you're in this reconciliation mode where you're trying to put things back together, that physical affection and sexual intimacy tend to drop off, not always. But that tends to be a result of a very close relationship rather than the path to a close relationship.
Yes, agreed. And then let's go into the ability to have some common goals, abilities to create common goals or pathways to resolve even maybe some of the minor issues. And this has a lot to do with giving and receiving and working together as a team on things.
Yeah, this is really important. This is almost always some of the first steps that I take with clients is determining where can we create some common goals or some sort of pathway to fix some things. I tend to see that if you can resolve some more minor issues, it becomes easier to tackle a little bit bigger issues and then a little bit bigger issues because you're building up trust in how you can resolve conflict.
I just want to say a lot of you are probably going to answer, no, we can't even resolve minor issues. And that's where we can come in and help you identify what small goals, right? They might not be the big ones that you want to resolve right now, but what smaller goals can you have in common, and what smaller minor issues that aren't so emotionally triggered can we work on that then snowball in the direction to fixing those bigger issues? One of the big mistakes that we often see is trying to resolve deep issues or really hard, severe, emotionally charged issues too soon. And it's like going in for brain surgery when you're in cardiac arrest. Like, it just would not work. And so we need to stabilize the relationship first. And we do that through some of these solving minor issues and creating common goals that then you can create stability and health in the relationship, so it's strong enough to handle some of the deeper issues. So another good question to consider there, does it continue to feel healthy to emotionally invest into your marriage? And this one becomes a very personal decision. I often see that people are really burnt out. They're exhausted. They're feeling hopeless. And sometimes they're just like, I can't keep doing this because I can't continue to maintain this level of emotional investment into the situation when it's not going anywhere. I want to preface that with, usually most of the people that we're talking to that are feeling like that, and it's a lot of people. So if you're feeling like that, you're not alone. It's usually because they're going about it in the wrong way. They haven't found what actually works to turn the situation around. Maybe you think that texting your spouse every day or bringing her flowers and all these things, you know, making all these positive changes and working on yourself is going to be the fix, and it's draining you and exhausting you, and it's not working. It's not effective in your relationship, and it's often backfiring. So what we want to look at first is, what are you doing to try to fix this? Is it working or not? And now let's start doing some of the right things, because it's going to feel a lot more emotionally rewarding when it starts going in the right direction.
Absolutely. So beyond that personal question, like, this is, I think, always a good question to ask as you are considering, like, is this viable or not? It's very important to kind of tap into how you feel. Absolutely agree with that. The next question, do you have an ability to step back from the relationship without completely leaving or moving towards divorce? And Heather and I, we don't tend to recommend trial separations, except in certain circumstances. But it can be a step rather than completely saying, okay, the marriage is over. Big things to consider would be, okay, what would this actually solve? And what more would be needed for your problems to resolve if you did take a break? And those are, I think, more important. Having that step back from the relationship should be seen as a means to an end, as like a way to resolve something. So if there's a high amount of tension or stress or lots of arguing, you might take this step back as a way to kind of resolve some of that tension and to be able to clear your head. But like I said, it's something to consider if you're saying, okay, is my marriage over? It's, can we take a step back from this, and can this solve any problems if we do?
We do this very differently as well. Like Mark said, we don't always say that this is the route to go, but occasionally it is, like a trial separation. It's basically, what we want to do is buy some time for things to cool down, to reduce the tension. But we're always very proactive in our approach, because we know that there needs to be solutions to solve these issues in order for it to be effective. Otherwise, time in and of itself doesn't change things. And that's where a lot of other, you know, maybe therapists or people out there say, like, the 45-day no contact rule or whatever. And time in and of itself doesn't solve anything. So what we do when we take a break or create space or buy time is, we are very proactive in the approach to solve the problems and reduce the tension. So it's important to look at, is there an ability to have that step back from the relationship without having to be completely going to divorce? Another great question is, what kind of bare minimum boundaries do you need in order for the situation to feel healthy for you? I would love it if every single person would ask themselves this question rather than, there's no hope and should I just give up, right? It's more like, what do I actually need to do here to feel healthy? to feel safe in this situation? And what would be some bare minimum boundaries that might help me feel that way? Because again, it's going to be one of those smaller steps towards the bigger outcome that's going to make it more sustainable in the journey. What do you need for your partner to understand about you in order to feel okay? Oftentimes we talk about how you have to go first and you have to put their needs first. And we're not saying that meaning to completely neglect how you're feeling and what your own needs are. It's just that we know we can't, you know, put pressure or demands on our spouse to meet those right now. But what do you need for your partner to understand about you in order to feel okay? Another great question to think about. How many times have you experienced similar problems or concerns with promises to change? This is another good one, right? Maybe you've made multiple promises to change, nothing's happened, or your spouse continues to make promises to change and nothing's happening. If that's happening repeatedly, it means that you haven't pattern interrupt and you haven't learned how to set down those broken promises, how to, I'm going to use the word enforce healthy boundaries. I'm not sure if that's the best word, but how to have a natural consequence to healthy boundaries. And I feel like I could go into a rabbit hole of that one because a lot of people don't know how to set healthy boundaries and make sure that change actually occurs in the relationship. And that's definitely something that we can help you navigate in a way that doesn't backfire. And what is the likelihood of things getting better if you exercise some patience? If you have the perspective of saying, hey, I am willing to do this because I don't want to live my life with regret. And I'm going to be patient and give it what it needs, the time and the space and the effort so that it can heal and, or at least give it the opportunity to heal. So those are some great questions to ask. I also encourage you guys, if you want to take our full marriage assessment, we have a Is There Hope for My Marriage quiz to find out if it's possible to save your marriage at this point or not. It's a totally free tool. It's there to help you get clarity. So just leave the word quiz in the comments below and we will send that to you right away.
Okay. Well, we covered a lot today.
Yes.
Yeah, this was a much bigger topic than we first anticipated. And I mean, we covered lots of different situations that actually can lead to the dissolution of a marriage. We talked about evaluating your own marriage, whether it's viable. We talked about pillars of a healthy relationship last week. It was a lot to cover.
Yes. So leave a comment. Let us know what you loved about this. What stood out to you? What do you feel like of all those pillars might be the breakthrough for you? Maybe the one that you guys are struggling with the most right now, and what will help you to get there? Maybe it's learning how to, you know, increase some vulnerability, how to make small bids for connection or intimacy. Maybe it's, you know, learning about why they're having the affair, what's causing them to deteriorate, you know, the relationship, or any of the ones that we talked about last week. So let us know what is helpful for you. And we reply to every single comment that we get here on Facebook or YouTube or any other platform. Now we're going to go to our marriage myth buster. All right. So our marriage myth buster, the myth today is all relationship conflicts are the same. They're all the same. This is one that we heard in our group. So Mark, take it away.
So yeah, I had to look at this a couple of times and I had to think like, where could this be coming from? My mind, you know, of course not. Of course, all conflict is not the same. Now, I could kind of perhaps come at it from this angle of understanding the question, like saying, okay, all relationship conflict is the same. It's all bad. And I would say that's probably not accurate. I think that in discussing this myth, I think it's relevant to discuss Gottman's conflict resolution styles. Because I do think that oftentimes it comes down to this. We could say like there's all these different types of there's different types of arguments, but I think it's much more about like what is your style of arguing, or what is your style of conflict within a relationship? So Gottman, and in case you all have been living under a rock as you've been looking at marriage or relationship advice and stuff. Gottman is the big name. John Gottman is the big name in marriage research. He had this huge study over decades that followed many couples and was fairly accurately able to predict who would stay together and who would not, and had a whole wealth of knowledge come from this study. And one of the bits of information that he took from this was these four different conflict resolution styles. And it was, let me see if I can pull it off the top of my head. I know one was affirming, one was conflict avoiding, one was volatile, and one was hostile, as I think the four names. Now you might say, okay, one of those sounds really awesome over the others. Like affirming sounds really a lot better than the other three, like conflict avoiding or hostile or volatile. But what was interesting was that Gottman pointed out that of those four, only one was really detrimental, and it was that hostile type. It's where you actually start attacking each other within a conflict. And I found this really interesting because, you know, this is, you know, I looked at that name, this volatile conflict, and I was like, how can that actually be a healthy situation for a relationship? But then as I started thinking about that, I looked at many close friends, how they handle their own marriages and their own conflict. And I have several friends that have this kind of conflict style. And I'm like, how are they still together? But it's just because I approach it a little bit differently. But, you know, I would talk to these friends and they might be sharing too much information, but they'd say, well, we'd have these intense arguments and then we'd have this passionate makeup sex afterward or something along those lines. and it was that volatile, is this balance. But basically Gottman's theory said, okay, these three other types can be healthy as long as you're matching up. If you're affirming and affirming, or volatile and volatile, conflict avoiding and conflict avoiding. Now, not to say that all those are 100% healthy, is more the statement was, these are all stable situations. And weren't going to lead towards the deterioration of the marriage in and of itself. Now, we could go into all sorts of other things here in terms of types of conflict. But I think a lot of it comes down to different styles, different preferences, different personality styles, and how we go about navigating this. We could talk about it from the Enneagram, or we could talk about it. You know, Heather and I have been very interested lately in this personality assessment called the CORE assessment. We could talk about it in terms of love languages. We could talk about it in terms of Madonna's six basic emotional needs, but like, where are your preferences? Where are your personality styles? How are you navigating these differences? I guess you could argue that all these conflicts are the same in that regard, but really, I'm just kind of like thinking out loud a lot here in this situation. I'm saying, relationships are complicated, and to boil it all down into this general statement and say that all conflict is the same is a bit reductive, and it's not really appreciating the complicated nature of a long-term relationship. And it doesn't really help you with solutions to kind of give these broad statements. So I will admit that there are some ways that you could describe all conflict being the same, but it's not very helpful to do so. So I don't know if that's a busted myth or not, but that's my say on the matter.
Thank you. And above all, we all know that we're going to experience some kind of conflict or some kind of disagreement in our marriage. We wouldn't be human if we didn't. And what's more important than how you like to resolve conflict, or if all conflict is the same, is, do you have the ability to give and receive feedback? Do you have the ability to resolve conflict? Do you have the ability to share how you feel and how your partner feels, and the ability to create common goals that are going to unify and strengthen you rather than pull you further apart? That is the more important question or issue to consider, and we can absolutely help you get there. So thank you guys so much for joining. We hope that this has been helpful for you. Above all, know that most marriages can be saved if they have the right method, the right support, and the right approach to get there. And we're so grateful that we've been able to help thousands of marriages now to be able to turn around from a situation that you might be in right now. And so there is more hope than you realize. Next week, we're going to share with you Knapp's relationship model, meaning how to navigate building up, bonding, and navigate your marriage as it's coming apart. So let's talk about how to bond your marriage, even if it feels like it's coming apart, next week.
Yep. Like we were just talking about this a little bit earlier. I thought it would be great to continue that discussion, go into depth. Like, how do you go up those stairs in a healthy way? How do you like prevent your marriage from going down that, you know, de-escalating or coming apart? And anyways, it will be a nice, informative, in-depth conversation, I think.
We'll call it Stop the Deterioration and Build Up Your Marriage.
Sure. We can have the clickbait.
There we go. There.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I do here.
I mean, there's a lot of merit in that sort of thing, but it'll be a great discussion regardless.
Thank you guys so much for joining, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.